The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
And this week, we are shouting at the devil.
Shout at the devil!
Bow, 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 bow.
Shout!
Yep. Oh, if I had just got a half a second longer.
I was waiting for my cue.
Oh, that was good.
We are winding down, winding up. We are wrapping up.
Believe it or not, this is us winding down.
It has been a long quarantine. Believe it or not, August is almost over, and that means Hot as Hell Month is coming to an end, and we are closing it out with two killer heavy metal, devil-tastic, demon-tastic, evil, sinister, flames movies.
That's right. This week we are talking about Jason Lee Howden's Deathgasm and Sean Burns' Devil's Candy.
Shout! Before we get into this week's films, John, what is keeping you creepy?
Well, we are in the middle of the
quarantine.
Yeah, we're in the middle of quarantine. Guys, did you know? Because based on how I'm seeing people act, no one does.
Oh,
anyway.
Boy.
Anyway, who cares? Doesn't matter. It does, but for the purposes of this podcast, it doesn't matter. We're in the middle of the Fantasia Film Festival right now. The virtual edition, the first ever virtual edition of the Fantasia Film Festival. And we've been watching a lot of movies.
A ton of movies.
Yeah. You know, like one of the cool things that's happened during the pandemic, during the quarantine, is that film festivals have opened up. So that way people who aren't living in the city where the film festival takes place can actually finally enjoy it. I think I was talking about it last time. You know, if you live in BC or you live in Winnipeg, you can finally experience Fantasia.
It is worth saying, though, that most of Fantasia, not all of it, a lot of the live events are available worldwide, but most of the films, if all of the films, are geolocked to Canada, which I'm secretly super excited about because there's so many cool virtual film festivals happening in America that I don't get to be part of.
There's one coming up in October that's a partnership between like three
every
or
single
four.
Genre
yeah.
film festival ever, and it sounds amazing. But luckily for us, we have some help this year with Fantasia. Normally it is John, myself, and Chris. Shout out to Chris Aitkins in Montreal who cover Fantasia. But we have a slew of writers helping us out this time. So we've actually gotten a chance to watch some movies for fun and stuff. And
how often does that happen at film festivals? Barely have time to sleep.
We are still turning out a bunch of reviews, but we do have some great voices on the website helping us. So if you want to keep up on all the genre films and all the quirky, weird stuff that's going to be hitting the world soon, there's tons of reviews at nofspodcast.com. John, are there a couple films that you want to shout out?
First, I want to give a shout out to Paul Lee and Stephanie Cole, who are also helping us with this, which is great because, you know, as Americans, this is the first time that they've had a chance to sort of taste Fantasia. That's a weird way to describe it.
Oh, we also have our editor, Grant.
Yes, of course. Grant is also helping. Grant DeArmet is our secret weapon, really, in everything that we do.
You give him no credit and make him do all the work.
Yeah, he reviewed a movie recently called The Climate of the Hunter, which sounds really bizarre. I don't even know... Well, how did he describe it? Like a giallo vampire movie with Jello, I think is what he said.
What?
Maybe I'm mixing my things up.
I want to see that one about a bunch of giant squishy monsters that turned into food that Chris reviewed.
Monster Seafood Wars.
Yes.
Yes, so it's a kaiju movie, but, you know, they're fighting the kaijus and they don't know what to do with these, you know, like giant octopus limbs that have fallen on the city. They decide to start cooking it. And apparently these monsters are delicious.
I love a movie idea where you start with the premise like, what if the monsters taste good. As for us, one of my favorite movies that I watched so far for Fantasia actually came out in the 1960s.
1966.
It's called Sting of Death.
Had to look at your notes for that, huh?
I did. It's coming, I think it's been restored by Arrow Video, so it should be hitting an Arrow release soon, which I'm going to be stalking them until it comes out, because it was the most bonkers, silly, hilarious movie. It's basically some dude in a scuba suit who's got like a giant jellyfish hat on, and he's just murdering a bunch of teens who just, all they do is dance horribly by the pool.
It's great. I loved every minute. But like all of those, like a good handful of those monster movies from that era, I can't figure out whether he is able to
become a jellyfish. I don't know.
Or if he's actually a guy who's killing people disguised in a jellyfish costume.
We did watch it at like 4:30 in the morning, so
There's no denying that the school of jellyfish that these people are like, freaking out about were Ziploc bags.
Ziploc bags floating on the water.
Five stars. Oh, so good. Opening night of Fantasia also brought us Neil Marshall's new movie, The Reckoning. You may remember Neil Marshall's previous films, The Descent and the new Hellboy movie that came out recently. The Reckoning is, I thought it was supposed to be more of a movie about plague doctors
I wanted plague doctors, not gonna lie.
Well, I mean, the promo photos were there. Why wouldn't they use
I mean,
them,
it
right?
is
we're
a time of
pandemic.
Plague.
Yeah. It's more of a movie about the witch trials and a woman who's accused of being a witch because she doesn't get sick.
Yeah, it gave me very, like, Sleepy Hollow vibes. It was okay.
It's coming soon.
There's a lot to be said about you have to get over like what you want out of a movie, because what you bring to a movie can also like color your perception of it. So I think now knowing that it's a witch movie, if I give it a shot again, I might have a different experience, because I was just like, where are the plague doctors?
There's some cool ghost stuff. There's some interesting late night booty calls from the devil.
Everybody loves a booty call.
Especially from the devil.
Shout at the devil!
Shout.
But it just kind of like went a little too back and forth to me. Like, oh, she's being interrogated, and then they throw her in jail.
Back to prison.
And then she's being interrogated, and prison. They throw her in jail. It unfortunately didn't do a whole lot for me. I will say, though, one great practical effect with a squished head that you are gonna love.
Don't spoil the squish. Something may or may not squish.
Enough said.
In the head.
Yeah. Look out for that one coming soon. You know, actually, we're also in a period where movies are starting to come back to the theater, despite the fact, you know, just because Tom Cruise went to the theater does not
mean... That was such a weird, like, yeah. The world is normal propaganda video. Like, big are you going to trust Tom screen. Cruise with yeah. anything?
No.
I wouldn't even let him hold, like, a bag of grapes
he
I want to eat.
He hasn't seen a real person for 35 years. Let's be real. Sure, occasionally, like, a journalist interviews him, but the whole time...
But then he jumps on their couch, and then it's weird again.
Yeah, you know, Tom Cruise... But, oh, thumbs up. Tom Cruise says we're safe, guys. Let's go back. So anyway, what I'm getting at, Tenants in the theater, and also New Mutants. You know, if you feel it's safe to go
Is
to
it
the theater,
really? Is it a mirage?
I don't know yet. Technically, the moment we're recording this, it's not. They could snafu late night. Oh, joke's on you guys, not happening.
Which, it's just a new trailer for New Mutants.
If that's what it was, I would not be surprised.
We're going to try to catch one or both of those films this weekend.
Yeah, they're playing at our local drive-ins. Not together, though, so we got to go on two separate nights.
We're going to go see The Spy Who Shagged Me with Tenet. I'm very excited.
All right,
John keeps saying no, but he knows it's already happened.
Well, that's because at a different drive-in, like 20 minutes away, they're playing Tenet with Unhinged, and I think Russell Crowe is a crazy person, but also, oh, you gotta look up the promo videos.
It's so good.
You know what? I'm just gonna drop a little bit of it right here. Enjoy this. This is Russell Crowe trying to sell you on his new movie, Unhinged.
They say there is a catalyst at the heart of the cinema experience, a social contract, a binding dynamic power that lifts the cinematic experience into a realm of intimate connection between the audience and the screen and the stars in the heavens beyond. They say. But who are they? Some conceited, pretentious fuckwads who try to piss in your pocket and tell you it's raining. Well, fuck that shit. I got a movie coming out. It's called Unhinged. I'm not fucking with you. It's called Unhinged. And it's gonna be in cinemas. Off you go.
It's wild.
I would watch that for 2 hours.
That's the I just want to see him at a press junket telling you about the movie.
So yeah, Tenet's coming to theaters. New Mutants coming to theaters.
Finally.
I will say, John, you did forget one of your Fantasia films that I know that you would be sad.
There are 20 movies of Fantasia.
But
I know
you'd be really sad if we didn't mention Fried Berry.
Fried Berry,
see,
guys.
See, I just know.
I had a feeling she was going to talk about Slacks, a movie about an evil pair of jeans.
Oh my God, so good!
But there's a movie playing at Fantasia right now from South Africa, from a director, Ryan Kruger, called Fried Berry. It is so off the wall, midnight madness. Like, to sum it up perfectly, our reviewer, Chris Atkins, who advocates taking hallucinogens while watching movies, wants you to know you do not need to take drugs to watch this movie, to enjoy this movie. It is nuts. It's a, you know, I don't want to give away too much, but essentially it's a heroin addict in Cape Town who gets abducted by aliens.
Maybe. Allegedly.
Maybe. And then just kind of like over the course of 48 hours just goes on this weird, wild Fear and Loathing in Cape Town adventure. Oh boy, it's bizarre.
Yeah, we're going to try to get the director, writer-director Ryan Kruger on the podcast.
Yes.
So hopefully that'll work out for an episode of Nightmare Alley, because I cannot wait to figure out where, like, how this movie was born. The lead actor is
incredible, right?
So good.
He's got maybe 5 words in the movie.
Oh, so good, though.
So yeah, but that's my big recommendation right now. Keep an eye out for Fried Berry.
And Slacks.
Two X's.
Evil Jeans.
From the Horror Collective. That's definitely going to be coming out soon, I think.
I do want to do one quick shout out because I always forget to plug it on the podcast. Our web store is full of cool new stuff. We have tons of new horror merch. We also have a new t-shirt designed by Robin Banks, our artist who did the horror movie marathon tee.
He turned us in to the Maitlands, guys.
We now have a horror for the casually obsessed tee, and it's very Beetlejuice-esque, but definitely not infringing in any way whatsoever.
No, neither is this Texas Chainsaw shirt that I'm wearing right now.
But yeah, head to store.nofspodcast.com. There's tons of generic horror merch, Halloween-y style t-shirts, as I said, our Nightmare on Film Street stuff. And we are also launching up a new newsletter that we're going to be throwing out there every couple weeks or so with tons of new updates and stuff.
Yeah, like we publish tons of content every day because we've got like an incredible team of writers at nofspodcast.com. We understand you do not have the time to read everything. But, you know, if you want to be kept abreast of the highlights that are
be kept abreast.
I don't know why that was, yeah, like I immediately was just like, who are you? What is
Shut
going?
Shut it down.
How do I edit this out?
But yeah, so sign up to the newsletter. There's a pop-up on the store.nofspodcast.com website. There's also a sign up in the sidebar of our regular website, just nofspodcast.com. But check that out. Check our merch out because I always forget to plug it. So it's probably going to be another 3 months till you hear from me about it.
Shirts at the devil!
Shirts at the devil!
All right, that's probably a good sign that we need to get out of here.
Shout out.
I'm sure you're sick of hearing us talk about movies that you can't see yet and Tenet. Nobody wants to hear anybody talk about Tenet anymore. Jesus. Let's talk about some fucking heavy metal movies, right?
Woo.
Let's get into it. Let's shout at the devil. Let's talk about Jason Lee Howden's Deathgasm.
That's me, Brody. My friends are losers. So we started a band.
This is your time.
Check it out.
Ricky Daggers. Is he dead?
Wouldn't it be crazy if the music had something to do with demons?
Demons.
We're all gonna die.
I translated those pages. Now people are turning crazy. Like possessed crazy.
What's up?
That was pretty cool. As is, I mean, the axe and the...
Jason Lee Howden's Deathgasm is currently sitting at a 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb. 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, 2.5 out of 4 from RogerEbert.com, and 3.3 out of 5 on Letterboxd. It's always a shame when you can't rate things like with devil horns or like...
I mean, we can. It's our podcast.
Out of 6.66.
Ooh.
For any heavy metal related movies. By the way, they gotta make
Can we do that?
We can. I think we should.
Can we establish that now? All heavy metal movies must be rated on a 6.66 scale?
Agreed.
All right.
This whole podcast let's do the Deathgasm shake on it. You'll have to believe that it happens.
Yeah, it did. We did it. It happened. So I'm going to say this. I really like heavy metal horror movies.
Not even just horror movies. Like, you, for some reason, was the person that reviewed Heavy Trip, which is just like a fun, cute movie from Sweden about heavy metal band.
Fucking loved it.
You also reviewed that Rory Culkin one.
Yes, I did.
Lords of something? Chaos.
No, Chaos. I almost said Salem too. Yeah, that one was dark. I guess I just like metal movies.
I will say, you're not a big metalhead person, but you like metal concerts.
I love a good metal beer tent.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing. Yeah. No, I...
You've never said no to me dragging you to a heavy metal show.
I really like seeing bands that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, especially heavy metal.
Yeah.
It's gotta be heard live.
Well, and I think that's the thing, too, is that they write their music to be played, and you can't really say that for a lot of other genres.
Yeah, like, we had a great time at the Lady Gaga concert. Could have just had just as good a time with a bottle of vodka and a Bluetooth speaker.
I mean, yeah.
Okay, my mistake.
Sure.
Wrong artist.
Yeah, I don't know. It's super fun. It's got a great fun vibe. It's got that, like, rock and roll, but there's also something a little bit risky about it, something a little evil about it. It's like horror and rock mixed together, which are two magical things. Are you saying you don't like heavy metal movies?
I just don't know where to go from here.
Oh, okay. I'm very quiet. I'm like, I'm do also, not. This is a surprise.
I'm also trying not to just be like too fucking like, yeah, right now. Because where do I go from there? If I start level 10, I love this movie. I can't ramp it up.
Yeah. So we actually missed this movie when it first came out. So it came out in 2015. The first time I had seen it was on the last drive-in.
No.
With Joe Bob.
You've seen it before.
No, I had not.
Well, I had. You know, what's funny, too, is that that means that this time around is your first time seeing it from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think on Joe Bob, we came in halfway through.
Yeah, we came in, like, for the sex toy zombie smashing, and I was like, what is this movie? Because I like it. I think it's just swell.
Yeah, heavy metal movies are just too much fun. Like, way too much fun. Like, okay, it's a horror movie. Your main character's an outcast. Big surprise. What cooler outcast is there than a metalhead? Whose mom is a meth head.
I love how, like, quickly they just graze through all that. The characters and the plot and stuff. Mom is introduced and gone so quickly. And all the characters' names come up on that fun, like, line art paper, hand-drawn cutaways, which are super great.
Oh, yeah, like... Anytime a character is introduced in this movie, too, they get the full page doodle treatment, and it rocks.
Yeah, the beginning of this movie is very super bad in terms of its dick doodles.
You know, like, maybe what I like about heavy metal movies, because I can't think of a heavy metal movie, horror heavy metal movie, that doesn't involve music being the object that invites evil.
Which is always great, because it's almost like satire in itself.
Hell yeah.
Because that's what parents hated about heavy metal.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Kids listening to heavy metal in their bedroom in the basement.
Worshipping the devil.
Exactly. And all of the movies play on that, and that heavy metal is always associated with the devil. And, I mean, you have movies like The Gate, and you have Trick or Treat, and you have... there's so many... Like, what...
Black Roses, Lords of Salem, fucking all of them.
Yeah, and it's always about invoking the devil, and everything that your parents warned you about... was true.
Yeah.
And that just makes metal cooler.
That you're right? Yeah. Oh, and yeah, I love it. It's always vinyl too. Like, it's gotta be physical media. And it's for the most part, for a lot of kids, it's they don't own vinyl. Like, I'm surprised even the kids in this movie like vinyl.
True.
2015. These kids were on that wave.
Slightly pre-vinyl. Yeah, and I think the best thing about these, like, heavy metal versus the devil movies is that you learn that these kids are actually good people.
Always.
They're always the heroes of these stories because they are they're good at heart. And so it's like almost like you should just trust your kids with the music that they like to listen to. Because
it's like horror movies.
They have a moral compass.
Yeah.
They're the ones that saved the day from the devil.
They are the ones that brought the devil in.
They may have
intentionally brought
the devil in.
I mean, that kid was getting it on all fronts, right? Like his cousin really is a fucking monster. Like he could not have picked worse relatives to live with.
He does kind of get his comeuppance, though.
Oh boy, does he. But the biggest shithead. Like, imagine that you live with the worst bully in school.
Yeah, they don't really go into his home life because there's one scene where the cousin's girlfriend, Medina, actually kind of has a crush on Brody, the lead character, and they beat the shit out of him.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, puffy black eye. They're kicking him in the ribs and the gut. They cut him, I think?
I don't remember. But they fucking trash his room,
they
too.
They beat the shit out of him. And then he has to go home to living with him. Like, imagine being bullied by somebody and then having to live with them.
Yeah, like, there isn't a whole lot of, like, they don't really show his aunt and uncle hating him or anything, but they're kind of, like, they're church people, so
yeah,
they're
scared. Yeah, they seem super square.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They seem super square.
They seem super square. And they got a box of zombie fighting tools in the closet.
Yeah. We'll get to it.
It's funny.
It's pretty great. Especially since that box is labeled church stuff.
I love it because they know that the boys are never going to look at it.
Oh, man. Okay, I gotta, fuck it. We're here. We're talking about it. If you got a box hidden in your closet, no matter what the label is on it, if somebody
do not look at on the box writing? Like, what do you...
Okay, well, I'll at least say, back when, like, I first started writing, like, short story ideas, novel ideas, and I was doing it on my laptop, I was, you know, the concern was always that somebody would get on your laptop, read your writing.
Oh, no.
Call you an idiot.
Read your writing, look at your favorite pornos.
Yeah. So the
all held together in the same folder.
But I also understood that that was just a silly fear that, like, people are going to have to read your writing at some point. So the folder that I kept my writing in initially was just a folder called Naked Photos of John. Because one, either they're not going to click on it, or two, they're going to go, I got to see this, and then open it up and just see my soul spilled out on pages, you know.
Oh, and then you'd share a biscotti and talk about your feelings over tea.
Yeah, but if I had a box, it would just be labeled taxes. Or, to be perfectly honest, maybe even just dildos.
I would write soiled baby clothes. Ain't nobody going to open that box.
Yeah, except we're people that don't have kids.
Which is funny.
And, well, then you would think that there's a body in it. I would be like, well, I have to open this now. Like, this looks like it could be filled with evidence. I definitely wouldn't write church stuff.
I think it was pretty smart to write church stuff. Except for, you know, when there's demons out and about and you need as many crosses as possible.
Yeah, get the church stuff! You're like, ugh. You know, on the other hand, any weapon you're using to fight a demon, church stuff.
Those anal beads were church stuff.
Oh, what if that was the defense, right? Like, no. These are tools and weapons.
I think the demons
are never going to see this dildo coming.
I think my favorite part, though, about that sequence is they're whapping them with dildos and they're hitting them with the anal beads. And it's just like, they know it's inefficient, but they keep doing it a little bit
well,
more.
Well, yeah, because there's that scene where, like, the demon has Zach, like, against the walls, choking him out. He's like, gotta reach the dildo.
And he just smacks him with the dildo, and it's like, your fist literally would have been better.
Yeah. Oh, boy. It's great, though.
Oh, it is pretty wonderful.
It makes for some good movie.
It's hilarious. It's just a great sequence, and they really relish in it, too. Like, there's a ton of slow motion, and just, like, dildos flopping around and hitting zombies in the face, and you're just like, oh my word.
But Brody comes with a chainsaw just to finish this scene off, and like, what's great about it is that, okay, we finally killed my aunt and uncle, everything's okay. And when his shithead cousin comes home and goes, what the fuck is going on, he just cuts his head off with a chainsaw. Like, oh yeah, no, he was a demon. Yeah, you know, he was definitely turning, saw it happening.
I think that was my favorite moment of the movie.
That was pretty great. And it's all in that actor's reaction to that whole scene, right? Like, it's played off very coolly.
I think one of the funnest things about this movie that I learned is actually that this exists because Jason Lee Howden won a Make My Horror Movie contest and got $200,000 from, I believe it was Ant Timpson's production company.
Oh, cool.
And that's how the movie got made.
Right on.
Yeah, like he basically had to write up a synopsis and create a poster for the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And his was the idea that got sold. New Zealand was just like, yeah, bring on the dildos and the demons. I think that's so fucking fun. New Zealand makes some of the zaniest horror films.
Oh, especially Ant Timpson, though, right? Greasy Strangler,
well, and
ABC's
Peter Jackson. Like, there is a legacy of gory, gross, balls-to-the-wall horror coming out of New Zealand. Like, they have a reputation for their gross horror.
Oh, yeah.
It precedes them.
And, you know, it's up to a new generation of filmmakers like Jason Lee Howden to keep that fucking train rolling. And he really does. This movie kicks a lot of ass. Like, obviously, Guns Akimbo is his other film, which is on Prime. We recently rewatched that, too. It's essentially Crank. Like, Crank with Daniel Radcliffe. But the one thing Guns Akimbo does not have, fucking metal. And, I can't talk enough about how great backmasking is in horror movies. Horror movies is the only, oh, you don't know?
What's a backmask?
Backmasking is the, like, oh, there are, you gotta play this record backwards, and there's fucking...
There's a term for it?
There
I
is
feel
a
like
term
we've
for
got,
it!
We went over this in our The Gate episode, and
probably.
I feel like a dunderhead for asking again, but...
That's fine. It's called backmasking. Nobody really refers to that. People just call it like subliminal messages, right?
Do metalheads go like, let's backmask this shit and see if there's like a secret song on here?
I have never, to be perfectly honest, I've never
Yo,
heard.
Yo, we're gonna backmask tonight, bro. Call your bros.
Yeah.
Garage, 10 o'clock, bring extension cords.
No, I've never actually heard anybody other than like, I've almost only
if I
ever
Google
read
backmasking, does it have a Wikipedia page?
For sure it does.
And it like there's like subheadings for like AC/DC and
AC/DC.
I don't know. Who else gets in trouble for being Metallica?
Led Zeppelin, actually.
Led Zeppelin.
Judas Priest would be the biggest one, mostly because those two kids that killed themselves, or one that killed himself and the other one who survived.
What?
Yeah, so that's like...
Did the record tell them to?
According to the parents, yeah.
Oh, shit.
The problem is that like they're just Judas Priest fans who tried to kill themselves. That's all, that's really at the end
Together?
Of the day. Yes.
Oh.
At the end of the day, that's all it really came down to, is that some severely bullied, depressed kids tried to commit suicide, who happened to listen to metal, and it all ballooned from there. Like, the fact that it's metal already has everybody else's hair on edge. Like, the back's against the wall, right? Nobody likes it. It sounds weird and dangerous and scary, and it goes against everything the nuclear family is supposed to be in America. So it's the enemy. And then once you start seeing regular, everyday, sad things happen, like kids getting murdered, kids committing suicide, and heavy metal somehow is related in some small way, or Dungeons and Dragons, or for that matter in the 90s,
I remember
video
when
games.
Dungeons and Dragons was getting flack, and it's just like, you know, this is just fantasy roleplay, right?
And they even find a way to include it in this movie. It's almost like everything that your parents told you was evil and would kill you, or at least lead to the destruction of your moral compass, is in Deathgasm. Mm. And so, sorry, yeah, the Satanic Panic is essentially just like, oh, we happen to find a heavy metal poster or one Motley Crue album in this kid's room, so obviously heavy metal made him do it. You should really check out some of, like, the
causation
80s.
Is not correlation.
No. You should really check out some of the campaigns from, like, the Christian and Catholic people in like the uber religious American people in the 80s that are going on campaigns. They did fucking tours where they were trying to show people what these records were saying. And it's like,
so they invented the backmask.
They invented it. Like, the thing is, like, no one has done it, and the only time it's ever come up ever is after the Satanic Panic or in response to the Satanic Panic, and it's always been tongue-in-cheek and a fucking joke.
I think that's kind of wonderful, though.
Oh, yeah.
That it's like you're taking the ownership back from the fear that was created.
It's like horror and heavy metal's version of drag is what it comes down to.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Spill the tea, John.
RuPaul's Drag Me to Hell race. And as much as, like, there's not really a whole lot else you can do with it, I want more. I want more movies of the devil Satan, anybody coming from a fucking wrecker.
The crazy thing, too, is they do already kind of have their own formula. Like,
yeah.
We let out the demons. Oh, no, it actually worked. There were real demons. Let's undo everything we've done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that's the formula. But I will honestly, I will never get sick of it.
Never.
Never. I will always watch a heavy metal horror movie because, actually, fun fact, Walmart did not like the title Deathgasm.
Oh, yeah?
So the alternate title for this movie is actually called Heavy Metal Apocalypse.
All right.
So it's...
So you would buy, like, Satanic Panic, because they also didn't want that.
What did they just call it? Panic,
I think it was just
right?
Panic, yeah.
Oh my god.
So there's a slip cover that went over top that said just Panic.
What's with Walmart's fear of Satan?
I guess their real fear...
They're like the capitalist overlords.
Yeah, but I guess their real fear is that their Christian core will...
Is it a Christian core? Christian core sounds like a version of Christian
metal.
There
is definitely a subgenre of music called Christian core.
Yeah, like...
Godcore.
Godcore!
Yeah.
God is love.
Let him into your heart! He'll forgive your sins!
And don't backtrack this record!
I guarantee every single album, probably every single song by any sort of grindcore, straight edge, Christian heavy metal band has the words... washed in the blood of Christ somewhere in there, because it's the closest thing you can get to sounding metal. And they probably all have, like, concept albums about the Book of Revelations. Fuck, I kind of want to get into it now. I bet it's great.
John's new favorite subgenre. Godcore!
Yeah. Praise him!
999!
999, yeah. 316! The number of John! What's that book? John 316? Yeah, there's gotta be it. I'm on to something here. Anyway, I think Walmart's just worried that there's so many Christians in America that if they anger one church, there's going to be a protest, it's going to spread to all the churches, and then no one's going to shop at Walmart.
The weird thing, though, is, like, what is the problem with the word deathgasm? Because it can't be the death, it's got to be the gasm.
It's definitely the gasm, are you kidding me?
Nobody's gasming in the DVD section of the Walmart.
I hope nobody's gasming in the DVD section of Walmart. Fuck.
Keep your gasms at home.
We got a fucking pandemic on our hands, people. God.
Ew. I don't even want to concept that in a post-pandemic world.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
The one thing I will say, and this comes down to budget maybe, is I had a real hard time understanding any of the demons.
The demon voices were very, yeah, and we couldn't get subtitles on Prime.
Yeah, and unfortunately afterwards we realized it is still on Shudder, which yeah. had subtitles,
fuck.
But Prime did not. Yeah, it was...
Yeah, it's not like, they're not speaking a different language, it's just...
And yeah, there were a bunch of like over voices. Like there were 36 voices saying whatever they were saying, and
yeah,
I couldn't make out most of it.
From what I got, bad guys are bad. They want to kill the good guys, and the good guys want to stop them.
Yeah, it just confused me because I didn't quite understand the plot initially. Like at the end, I kind of figured it out, but I didn't quite understand why there were zombie demon humans running around, because I was just like, where is this demon guy they invoked? Why isn't he here?
Oh, because they're essentially there to clear out the area to make room for the demon guy.
Yeah, they're basically just trying to kill everybody. I wanted to ask you this, because
sure.
I'm pretty unfamiliar with, like, metal
yeah.
in general. There were a lot of, like, metal stings and stuff throughout the movie. Was it a lot of recognizable metal? Like, were there a lot of bands that you could pinpoint, or was this more indie production-made music, do you think? Like, do you think they did a lot of
them? It's definitely a mix of both. Like, there is some original music that was made for the movie, and then there were some songs that are from bands. Now, I'll say, I'm not the biggest metalhead, don't get me wrong. I prefer my metal heavy, but I...
yuck.
But I do prefer seeing bands live. Obviously, I have some go-tos, and... The songs that were in the movie were definitely like, oh, like I could pick it like, oh, I'm pretty sure this is a Cannibal Corpse song. Like, not that they're not my favorite band, but like I recognize their sound.
I did see a Cannibal Corpse shirt, I think. So.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, there's Cannibal, there's Cannibal Corpse all over this.
And a poster.
Yeah. There's Anal Cunt. There's a bunch of bad names. Oh, man. Yeah. So that is also the problem with metal, is that it's sometimes like a specific subgenre of horror. It's antagonistic. It's it doesn't want you to be part of it, you know, but that's also, that comes from the Satanic Panic era. Like, the bands that were around in Satanic Panic era, like, yeah, sure, Slayer was there, but they were, like, peak, darkest, baddest band in the world. But it's like Judas Priest, Motley Crue, people that you would laugh at now.
Motley Crue with their, like, incorrect umlauts?
Yes, they said shout at the devil, Kim. Oh, God, are you kidding me? We can't have our children listening to this. But, like, nowadays, like, it's kind of... It's all in response to that, like, the same way that you see with, like, the, like, Tyler, the Creator and the Odd Future Gang when they were first starting up. It's like, oh, you think we're the worst people? We're the super nicest people in the world, but we're gonna show you what you're afraid of. Like, that's always the idea, right? Like, the barrier to entry is your own fear of that subgenre and those people. So, you get bands like Anal Cunt or Cannibal Corpse, and their album covers especially are horrific. But it's usually just to keep out the people that they wouldn't want around anyway.
I mean, I kind of get that. I don't think I would, like, have posters of it in my room. But, you know, to each their
own. You want
to
be left alone!
But
you
want, like,
to be left the fuck alone! And you only want to talk to people that are also interested in the same music. I get it.
Yeah.
I was never a good enough guitar player to get, like, that deep into metal.
I think had I have discovered metal in high school, I would have been very into it because I was very into, like, the goth stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Aesthetically, it was, like, a huge thing for me. And I think that's probably why it's primarily, like, a high school age thing, because
fuck yeah.
It's metal is about kind of just, like, vocalizing the negative, angry, upset, hurt, and almost cruel side of humanity that everybody pretends doesn't exist. And then when you're a teenager, it's kind of the first time you're experiencing those feelings in a concrete way, like, as an adult and trying to ration them. So it makes sense that a lot of teenagers, like, glom onto that because it's kind of like the first honesty you see.
Totally. Absolutely. It's the first honesty you see. It's the first time that you become aware of people lying to you. Like, you really, as a teenager, start to realize what the world is. And it's not just what television tells you it is and what your parents tell you it is.
That's an important thing.
Oh, very important.
What your parents say.
You start to really piece things together for yourself. And the world is a much darker place. And what's waiting for you at the end of it? Death. So, I mean, like, really, you got nothing to look forward to. You mix your hormones into that. It's a fucking disaster. And that's the, yeah, like, I think that's...
Being a teenager is rock and roll.
Fuck yeah, it is. Fuck yeah, it is. And
like,
yeah.
Just coming through the understanding, the concept of death.
Well, yeah, because you have to come to terms with it as a teenager. Like, it's yeah. It's something that, like, as a kid, you just aren't aware of or people don't really want to sit you down and get you to feel the gravity of it.
Yeah, like, I remember having to deal with death as a kid, but it was just like, I remember things like what funerals were like, and just like how we had to wear black dresses, and everybody always gave me coffee, even though I wasn't allowed to have it. Like, you know what I mean? That's the concept of death when you're young. It's not even about the death part.
No, it's a celebration of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yeah, I think high school, regardless of whether you listen to a metal or not, I think music for a lot of people is a big part of high school. Mm-hmm. And I think it's partly how you find your tribe, you know? So, like, most of the people I hung out with in high school were either metalheads or punks. Like, those were, like, the real...
That was our Venn diagram. It's because I didn't hang out with the metalheads, but I did hang out with the punks.
Yeah.
And that's where you and I kind of met.
Yeah. I definitely hung out more with the metalheads than the punks, but, like, we all got along. We all smoked cigarettes at the edge of the high school property line.
All the alternative music kids generally got along.
Yeah, we were great friends. And, like, that's also true about heavy metal movies, I think. Like, you get the movie Heavy Metal, obviously. It's, like, a cartoon horror anthology set in, like, fucking space and stuff. But, you know, movies like Trick or Treat, Deathgasm especially, you know, they are high school movies. And maybe that's partly, too, because that's where you're in a band, right? Like,
so true!
You need to have a band that's just trying to discover who they are and be heavier than everybody around them. They're digging through crates trying to find unheard
spells.
Of records. Yeah! Breaking into the house of, like, a forgotten metal legend who's hiding out in New Zealand, sleeping like a fucking vampire with the spell clutched to his goddamn chest.
I was totally picturing him as Iggy Pop.
Me too.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. He kind of looks like a New Zealand Iggy Pop.
I was just like, he's like metal Iggy Pop.
I bet they tried to get Iggy Pop. And he was like, yeah, you know, I'm a little busy right now.
I would have paid good
cool.
money to see Iggy Pop, like, as a no-eyed demon.
Oh, yeah.
He would do a good no-eyed demon.
Because he can bend backwards, right?
Have you seen that meme of Iggy Pop performing, like, as a senior citizen?
Is just this the wrinkles?
And it looks like the fucking Book of the Dead from Evil Dead.
Yeah.
And, like, the meme is about, like, summoning Kandarian demons or some shit. But it really does.
It really does. I've seen it. You know, it's great.
It's honestly, it's because he's an older man now, but he is ripped underneath.
Still ripped.
Yeah, like, he was, like veiny and he shit. Because, like, he's got muscles underneath that old man's skin.
Oh, yeah. He's still touring. And he's still fucking going. Like, he goes hard. Yeah, I love Iggy Pop.
Oh man, I love that meme.
One of the things I love about this movie too is that it feels like it's got, like, as much as it has a whole ton of Peter Jackson DNA to it, it's got even more Sam Raimi DNA to it, right? It's super low budget. It's super indie. It's got all of, like, that signature Raimi zoom in where, like, the camera is shifting as it's pulling in. There's, like, way too much wind in the air kicking up every piece of paper.
Just demons somebody... make wind.
Yeah, they just... Yeah, that's right. That's right. Demons make... And they just, like, turn to the camera just, like, to reveal, like, their eyes fucking just, like, blacked out and shit. Blood coming out their asshole. You know, standard demon stuff.
Some of my favorite stuff, and you see it a lot in Guns Akimbo, because Jason Lee Howden's really delved into that style of filmmaking, is the fun POV handheld type stuff where, like,
yes,
we're in the mouth of the mom as, or as the aunt of the demon.
Oh my god, yes, that
and
shot
you can
is
see
so
her fucking
good.
Teeth. And then there's one where, I think it's the double chainsaw moment where we're POV from the chainsaw as it's, like, cutting through people and shit. And you're just like, I could watch this for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, you get,
like,
so
the
many
protagonist
of those
is the chainsaw.
Oh, I fucking love it. You get, like, in Guns Akimbo, you get, like, POV from, like, the shotgun just, like, clutch, like, loading a bear.
I love when you lock on something.
Yes.
In a movie, it's so creative and so fun, and it shows that, like, oh yeah, the reason why we're this omnipotent eye is just because that's standard. And I love when we break what's standard. Like,
yes,
we don't have to see the whole room. Like, show me what the gun sees.
Well, it also understands that, like, this is you don't just understand heavy metal music. You understand, like, the heavy metal emotion. Like, there's emotion's the wrong word for it.
Well, it's
but,
very,
like,
rock and roll.
Yeah, like, you inject heavy metal into the DNA of the film, not just in the story and the characters, but in the actual filmmaking process. We're not really doing enough talk about how fucking funny this movie is. I didn't even remember the scene whatsoever when the bad guy he sent somebody out to go kill the rock star and get the spell. And he comes back to let him know, like, hey, don't worry, killed the rock star, didn't get the spell though. And as punishment, they cut his head off. I think that's the hardest I've laughed all quarantine, because, like, he gets, like, these, like, demon fucking knight guys to, like, cut his head off with a ninja sword or whatever, and he's like, you idiots, you gotta put a tarp down, do it again. And
oh man, their posture when they're, like, holding the head like in front of the headless body, it is so funny.
It's great because it just goes, it goes 30 seconds longer than you expected it to. I was
like, oh, they're committing,
they're actually doing it. I honestly thought when he was like, do it again, we would cut away, and, like, that's funny in itself, but they literally acted it out again.
Oh boy.
With a tarp.
Yeah, this movie is kick ass, and it's just preposterous in all the funnest ways, and you kind of love that it's scrappy and low budget, because these movies need to have a feeling of authenticity, and they need to have, like, that passion and that love, and you need to see people having fun, and you really do with this movie.
Totally.
So I'm gonna rate it out of 6.66.
yeah,
I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 6.66.
I'm giving it 5.55 out of 6.66.
Ooh. Ooh, 0.55.
0.55. And I do at least want to say that I think the scene where, man, we didn't talk about any of the end of this movie, because, like, it doesn't quite make a
they
whole lot of sense.
They save the day.
I don't really care about rules so much, especially the rules are not metal. But the scene where they are making all of their equipment, like, they're putting the fucking barbed wire on the weed whacker, and they're just going out to, like, make their own gear, like, their arsenal. It's very reminiscent of the chainsaw building scene in Evil Dead 2.
So true.
Yeah, it looks great. Love it. I really like a lot about this movie.
I had a hard time in that scene mainly because I know that Zach had kissed Medina, and
what a fucking dick.
And I was waiting the whole movie for, like, that shit to get resolved, because I'm like, no, I do not think Zach is cool. I think he's a bad bro. But and we didn't solve it until, like, the final act. And I was just like, we gotta fucking nip this in the bud.
God because damn it.
They're not real bros and they're doing bro things like killing demons together.
He doesn't know how unbro he is.
Yes. And I was like, we must unbro the bros.
So, I mean, like, I also love the, man, I'm sorry. I'm gonna try and not keep talking, but, like, I love when he's listening to metal, and we go into, like, what it feels like to listen to metal, and he's on a fucking mountaintop.
Oh, that, and those Medina's are so
there,
great.
And, like, lasers come out of his eyes to, like, take off the bra that was there. But, like, my favorite of that is when Medina listens to metal for the first time, and we see the exact same thing when she's on top of the fucking mountain, girls all around her, big ass fucking sword. Man, this movie kicks ass. This movie kicks so much ass.
Not enough nightmare? Become a patron of Nightmare on Film Street to instantly access hours of bonus episodes. Unlock frightfully good rewards like shout-outs on the show, stickers, and more. Only at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
Would you like to talk about another heavy metal movie?
Absolutely, I would.
This one, maybe not as explosive and fun, but, like, full of fucking hellfire. We're talking about Sean Burns' The Devil's Candy.
We've come to the place where we joke about the idea of the devil. But that is Satan's lie, to distract us from the reality of who he is.
Hear what's going on.
It's like it flowed through me. I don't remember painting this.
This is Mommy and Daddy's house. They're dead.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
I need to come home now.
We are his pawns. We are his demons on Earth. He uses us to carry out his unspeakable deeds. We satiate his hunger.
Your latest work is wonderfully disturbing.
Oh my God.
I didn't mean to do this.
To sacrifice.
He will slither into your soul. There's no mask in a Halloween store. He's not what you see in the movies. He is an active, violent, personal reality.
Just the gas?
He's right. You are the sweetest candy of them all.
The Devil's Candy from 2017 is currently sitting at a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb. RogerEbert.com gave it a 3.5 out of 4, but Letterboxd says 3.3 out of 5.
Doesn't 2017 feel like so long ago?
I was looking at my Letterboxd. January feels so long ago.
Is that just like quarantine brain, or is that me getting older and having a senior citizen's understanding of time? Like, yes, revolving around the sun. I understand it.
I mean, I'm inclined to say, yeah, it's quarantine. Quarantine's made time weird. But every year when we try to put together our top 10 movies of the year, I'm like, that was this year? That wasn't forever ago?
Devil's Candy feels like it's been out for at least 6 years.
At least.
12 years even.
I mean,
I'm pushing it. No, it feels like it came out in 2015.
It hit the festival circuit in 2015 and didn't really get released until 2017. So kind of a Tigers Are Not Afraid situation happening with that one.
I wonder why that was. Maybe it was just looking for distribution or
something.
Because it did, it ended up on Netflix for a while. That was the reason why we didn't own it up until recently, was because it was on Netflix. And then obviously we were like, let's do it on the podcast. No longer on Netflix.
No longer anywhere in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
Thank God for that Shout Factory sale.
Right.
Blessed be.
I think this is a really interesting pairing because Devil's Candy is nothing like Deathgasm. It's a completely different...
It's rock and roll!
Yeah, it's a completely different take on, like, a heavy metal movie, right? And I wouldn't say it's like, oh, it's just a horror movie that has some characters who like heavy metal. Like, this movie's fucking metal, yeah.
Yeah, no, and the fun thing is, this movie is also very ambiguous in its representation of the devil. It's a very small story, and I almost forget that in rewatching it for the podcast, just how vague the devil-y references are in the movie. It's kind of more of a story about this family and this crazy guy who wants their daughter.
Oh yeah, but like, would the devil ever fucking like, when you really think about making a deal with the devil, would it really be like The Witch, where some guy in great leather shows up and's just like, yo, give me your soul, I'll give you everything you want, feed me your daughter and you can be a famous artist, like, or would it just be implications and inferring?
You're getting too far into it, because I like, so I do want to get to the bottom of who and where and what the devil is doing in this movie.
That's a complicated mess, I'll tell you right now.
Exactly. So, like, I want to get into it. But, yeah, like, what is Pruitt Taylor Vince's involvement in... Okay, yeah, it's so much.
Let's at least do the one thing we both want to do and admit that Pruitt Taylor Vince improves every movie he's in.
And Ethan Embry's abs.
All right, sure.
In this movie in particular.
Yeah, no, Devil's
His
Candy.
His sweaty painter abs.
It's really a family film.
His paint-covered ladder climbing, airbrush spraying, sweaty can't protect his family abs.
See, it's got metal for your dads. It's got a nice identifiable teenage daughter. Like I'm saying, Devil's Candy, fun for the whole family.
And Ethan Embry's abs. I think Ethan Embry's abs are for everyone.
Sure. I get so much out of it.
You enjoyed it when it was combined with metal, because you were just like, yeah, this scene rocks. And I was like, I agree. Hard agree.
That is the fun part about watching a movie like this with you, or just your wife in general, whoever you are listening to this. Yeah, like the scene, oh, fuck, this movie looks so good, and it kicks so much fucking ass. And yeah, it's like a Harlequin novel come to life.
He is the Fabio of my metal dreams. Metal Fabio, I love it.
Metal Fabio sounds weird.
Shout out to Ethan Embry's wig for most of this movie.
there's a few reshoots that are just like, eh.
The only scene where I was like, ooh, that wig is, I think, the first time he's dropping off his daughter, and it's like way too low on his forehead, and I'm like, ooh.
What if you find out that he grew his hair out for this movie, including that scene, and he's just having a bad day?
Well, congratulations on his forehead on shrinking a few inches, but it looks great, though, when it's all sweaty and gross. Like, I don't know why I'm into, like, sweaty and gross hair, but John, it worked for you!
I mean, thanks. It's just, he looks like he's getting stuff done! The guy's busy! I don't know.
And he's got his, like, I'm an artist ponytail. A ponytail that's got purpose is a ponytail I'm all right by.
You hate the 80s movie producer ponytail, is that what it is?
Exactly. Like, okay. If you're not chopping wood, no ponytail for you.
Oh, yeah, you have to have already been sweating and been and like, then, how do I get this out of the way?
Yeah, just like, ah! And then, like...
Some of it falls out halfway through.
You wove a hair tie from the tail of a squirrel.
What? This is very specific. Go ahead, keep telling me a little more about your weird ponytail fetish.
I didn't know I was into it until this movie. Also, like, shirtless guys on ladders. That's a thing now.
All right, well, I could at least...
But they have to be possessed by the devil, I think.
Yeah.
It's a very specific fetish.
I mean, the age of the internet, no fetish too small. No fetish too niche? I don't
know. Is there an Ethan Embry fan site just for this movie?
Sure there is. It's nofspodcast.com. He has appeared on multiple,
oh my God,
multiple lists about dad bods, cool dads.
Shout out to Jessica's dreamy dads list. It's the thirstiest corner of our website, and it's so wonderful.
Also, a little like asterisk to the first of several. There's at least two right now as of recording. I'm sure another one's going to pop up before this episode even goes out.
You know, I was wondering how this episode was going to go, and it's gone pretty much how I've imagined.
How you expected? Oh, it's so great because there are slow motion scenes of him just like fucking spray painting a canvas, and like we're both drooling over the TV and for various reasons, I guess.
For all those demonic visuals.
Yeah.
The sweaty, sweaty demonic visuals. What did you like about the movie, John?
It's so funny that I'm my guy in the movie is the exact opposite of Ethan Embry. Like, Pruitt Taylor Vince, like, fucking, like, 350-pound, bald Pruitt Taylor Vince who wears a jumpsuit the whole movie.
I love his tracksuit. I love his tracksuit.
He's so fucking good in this. I love him in everything.
He is amazing in everything. He is one of my favorite actors of all time.
I've never seen him on screen in the smallest part, just in the background, and not immediately ignored everything else that was happening. Like, even in Natural Born Killers, he's a jail guard in that movie. He's in it for 30 seconds. I spent the entire third act wondering what he was up to.
I also think it comes down to that he's this archetype character almost without, I don't know, like, he's got this, who would I compare him to? Almost like a Steve Buscemi character, whereas, like, you have to be very careful in what you put him in, but if you put him in the right role, it just elevates your movie to that next level.
He's the Steve Buscemi of John Goodman's?
He is the Steve Buscemi of John Goodman's.
As Ray in this movie, too, he is just crazy dangerous. And he's the first person we see at the beginning of the movie, right? Like, it's the middle of the night. He's got the crucifix up on his wall. We start hearing fucking, like, devil voices in the room with him. And he starts playing fucking guitar in the middle of the night to drown out the goddamn sounds. Oh, man. This movie's metal. I love it. I love it so much. And I think that's our first take on what this movie's not necessarily trying to say, but, like, how it's treating heavy metal. Because arguably, the music is not evil, which is how it's generally interpreted, or at least seen throughout the entire 80s. We talked a little bit about it at the top of the podcast. But, you know, these voices, the sinister fucking devil voice is trying to get to him. It's trying to influence him. And we learn later he's definitely got a bit of a dark past where maybe he was doing some things that he didn't want to do, hurting people beyond his control. And the music, the louder he plays it, the more he doesn't hear the voices, the more he remains a calm, sane person who doesn't hurt anybody. And
that's interesting to think of how, like, teens kind of glom on to metal music.
Fuck yeah!
Because it's the first thing that they hear that echoes back the dark emotions and sentiments that you go through at that time, which is perfect because, like, you're drowning out. It's almost like you're drowning in the feelings that everybody's ignoring.
Yeah! So you like the beer tent of a heavy metal festival, but, like, when you're at any sort of live event, especially if you're super close to the stage or, like, maybe just off to the side where the speakers are.
Oh, I do not like that.
Oh, that's where I like to go. That's my sensory deprivation tank where, like, I'm packed in too tight. I can barely breathe. There's people everywhere.
So you're trying to emulate anxiety. I just want you to know, like, as somebody who's experienced the elevated heart rate and all that, like, scary shit that happens with anxiety where you think, like, oh God, I've converted myself into heart attacks.
Yeah.
That's what I get when I'm at the side of the stage. Like, I don't like messing with my heartbeat.
Oh, it's so good. Like, I remember that one time we were at, like, I was either at a Protest the Hero show or maybe it was Lamb of God, and, like, you could just fucking feel your bones rattling with, like, every bass drum. You made me move away from the speaker. You couldn't handle it.
I don't like this.
But I'm also the person who loves Don't Breathe movies that just, like,
I love not being able to breathe.
Yeah, I love that anxiety feeling that certain horror movies and suspense can give me, and I understand why it's not necessarily your bag. But that's exactly what Pruitt Taylor Vince is trying to do there, right? Like, he's got this, it's not the biggest Marshall stack I've ever seen, but he's got a cool fucking Marshall speaker to go with his flying V guitar, and he's just got it fucking cranked up. So that's all he can hear, all he can think about, all he can feel is the sound of that fucking tritone just like going through his whole fucking body. Sorry, I used to play guitar. But that's also what's interesting about what he's doing there. So it's called a tritone. It was the devil's note, essentially, or the devil's chord. It's essentially pure dissonance.
It's Latin.
Kinda. So
speaking in three languages, one's an ancient one that's dead, and nobody knows what he's saying. Second one, you know, your standard G chord, and then
your standard G chord. You augment the fifth if you want, but yeah, no, music was always weird. Music that has sounded like metal has always been frowned on forever. And I'm not saying that there's been some crusade against like dark stuff, but I mean, back when the church controlled everything, yeah, there were crusades against dark stuff. They wouldn't even play sixth chords.
This is like the elevator not stopping on the 13th floor shit.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, like I'm losing my plot a little bit, but yeah. And I love that that's our first introduction to metal and what it's doing specifically for this character in The Devil's Candy.
Yeah, and he makes such an interesting villain too, because the more time we spend with him, you realize how erratic he is. And Sean Byrne, the director, does a really great job of not showing us really impactful moments and skipping us ahead.
Fuck yeah.
So that we're dropped into a situation where it's almost like just after the climax has happened. And so things that you would normally cinematically be shown in a movie are taken away from you. So you just have to have this like sinking feeling of like, oh shit, it's already happened. That creates such a natural dread response. And it really amplifies this movie in a way that connects you to it. And it's just like, it's a very uncomfortable watch in that sense. But the more time we spend with Pruitt Taylor Vince's character, the more you realize that he might actually not be the bad guy. And
no.
He's either an unfortunate victim, right?
Either
it's a mental illness thing that he's fallen victim to, or this possession, or this coaxing from some darker presence.
Right.
Some presence. Yeah, it's like it's forcing him to do these things, and he's very successful at it. And we don't even get to see how successful he is, but through Ethan Embry's paintings.
Yeah, because Ethan Embry and his family, they move into Ray's house. Ray's killed his parents, and we don't necessarily know what's happened with him. Like, I think a police officer
says that he's been in a facility for 20 years.
That comes later in the movie. I think the 20 years that he spent in a facility is before he's come back. I see the very opening of the movie as sometime has passed, or he's very recently home again after being in the facility.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And yeah, Mum unplugs his guitar. He can't play loud enough to drown out the voices. He kills both his parents, and then I guess just disappears because the house is on the market, and Ray's family moves in. And yeah, like he starts like automatic painting.
Fugue painting
is probably the best way to put it. Yeah, he doesn't remember painting this dark fucking metal shit, but it just flows through him.
Even his pre-possessed paintings, I have to say, like he's painting some butterflies for the bank.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're on blood.
Yeah, like it definitely looks like it would be the inside artwork to an album. Like it's not gonna sell like a new.
But we're gonna
Metallica
put the lyrics
album
on it.
Yeah, right. It's just like, oh yeah, it's like I guess this is. I mean, fuck, you just add a little like burnt around the edges, like it's like a scroll that we
found. Sepia tone overlay.
Yeah, it's still kind of fucking metal, but. Yeah, I want to go to that bank.
I was like, I don't know if like that bank is definitely run by the devil.
What is
it's
his...
the devil's bank.
It's the devil's bank. What is... Oh, the, all they do is...
What if he's been painting for the devil his whole life?
I mean, that might be how most artists feel.
Oh.
But like, I definitely want to meet the bank manager who looked at his previous portfolio and went, this guy's perfect to paint butterflies. Oh, boy. His first painting, though, is like...
His first fugue painting.
It's cool, but it's not like I look at it and I'm like, oh my god, the next great artist has arrived.
I have had an epiphany.
But I guess...
And it's an upside down cross.
Yeah, right? It's just a cool upside down cross. It looks cool. But when he brings it to the art gallery, there is a sense of... he has arrived. And I think it's probably just that there is, like, the painting is essentially just an indication that the voices are in him.
Have reached him.
Yeah, so, like, it has nothing to do... Ugh, fuck, I don't want to talk too much about the art gallery. We can fall into a rabbit hole if we talk about the art gallery. But it's... Okay, so he paints a cool upside-down cross. I think it looks great. It looks like a cooler inside artwork piece than the butterflies. But, yeah, he eventually paints over those butterflies, and, like, they become fucking just, like, dead kids. Including his daughter.
Yeah, and well, his daughter's at the bottom of the painting, and she's not dead, but she's screaming out.
Yeah.
And she's surrounded by these ever-increasing dead children, which is... Fuck.
I love when his wife comes in, though, and, like, she's great, because she is not... she's not a metalhead whatsoever. She's just a nice Texas gal, and...
She does have a little bit of color in her hair, though, so I think she was metal in her days, but I think she started to grow up a little bit. But I do set want a side note say that I love their family dynamic.
Their family's great. I love them. Like, it's maybe a little weird how close friends Jesse and Zoe are, but it's cool. I mean, like, you should strive to be friends with your kids, I guess.
Probably my favorite part of the movie is him just trying to figure out how to be a good dad. And, like, how to be a dad in general.
Yeah.
His dad plot arc is, like, my favorite thing of this whole movie.
It's the whole movie, though, right?
Because he continually fails at being an alpha, if that makes sense. Like, he's given these opportunities throughout the film to save them and to save his daughter and to protect her. And he fails at it over and over and over again. And I'm jumping ahead here, but the moment when he gets shot in, like, the big finale, I definitely had a little secret cry.
Oh, did you?
I totally cried.
Oh, wow.
I felt so bad for him and his abs.
He's never going to climb that ladder again. Oh, God. What kind of reach is he going to have with a bullet wound?
Who shoots those abs?
I think maybe you were just upset that those abs did not stop a bullet.
I was sad that they gave him a baseball bat and they didn't let him use it. But the thing is, the greatest part is when he grabbed that baseball bat and Pruitt Taylor-Vince is trying to get in the house. He's like holding it like he's never held a baseball bat in his life. And I'm like, oh yeah, those are painting muscles. Those aren't like physical effort muscles. He doesn't know how to use those for pain.
For pain. I love, you know, my favorite part in terms of their family dynamic, which I think says everything about them is, well, actually, I do love the montage where they're moving in. I think that's a lot of fun, but it's when they're driving to go see the house for the first time, right? Like, he's still fucking dirty because he forgot they had an appointment. He got lost in his painting. His hands are covered in paint. He's sweaty and greasy, and they're just fucking headbanging in the car, but mom is there, and she's just like, do you mind if we listen to something a little less heavy? That's great. Like, that is a capsule moment.
It's just a sweet moment. Yeah.
But I really, I think it's very funny when Astrid comes into the barn to see, like, the really horrifying painting that he's been working on that has their daughter in it. And they're both just like, we can never let Zoe see this. And every single time I'm like, why? I bet she'd think it would be, like, it's fucking rad. Are you kidding me? Dad, you painted me in hellfire? Put it in my room. I'm sick of looking at those fucking teddy bears. I guarantee she would ask to keep it. As creepy as it is.
As creepy as it is.
But it's still cool as shit. If I walked into a room as a 14-year-old girl, and I saw somebody had painted me in fucking hellfire, like, yeah, I would politely ask for that painting. It would be on my wall immediately. Wouldn't you?
I don't know.
You think it'd be creepy?
It's pretty red. Speaking of which, the montage where he's doing the painting and it's intercut with Pruitt Taylor-Vince killing a bunch of kids and there's like, blood, paint, blood, paint.
Well, yeah, because he's like mixing the
tub,
paint and
blood,
shit.
Paint.
It looks so good.
Oh, it's so good.
And you don't see anything. Like, that's what's cool about it is that, like, you don't see him cutting up a kid, but, like, you really get the same, like, feeling of, I just watched somebody hack a body into pieces, put it in a suitcase, and bury it with a dozen other suitcases.
The suitcases really got me in the same way that they kind of, it's got that, like, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer vibe, and that there's, like, a level of preparation, and that, like, oh yeah, I can cut this small enough to fit inside a carry-on suitcase.
He's done it before.
Yeah.
He definitely knows what size to get.
Well, and when he finally succeeds in kidnapping Zoe, which we will get to, he has the suitcase ready. And that is just like, ugh, the cringiest no moment.
Can you imagine working at a Target and somebody's coming in buying suitcases like every week, every other week?
Or just a lighter for a can of gasoline?
Well, that's a little, yeah, that's a little much. That gas station attendant should have called the police.
And he had dirty fingernails. Ugh.
Also, I don't think you're supposed to bring the gas can with you into the gas station.
So weird. But yeah, let's talk about the fascination with Zoe and the kidnap of Zoe, because that's the main plot of this movie, is that either the devil or Ray, Pruitt Taylor Vance, wants Zoe.
Yeah.
And is very fixated on Zoe.
Yeah, she is the devil's candy. He really tries his best to drown those voices out, but there is definitely a moment where he decides, I'm going all in on the devil voice, right? Because mm-hmm. he gives her the guitar. The guitar is literally, the guitar and the amp are his only line of defense against the evil voices that are trying to influence him and control him. But when he gives it to her as a gift, he's got nothing to protect himself against anymore. And the worst part, I guess, is that
but it also might be a thing, too, because she's living in his house and she's actually in his bedroom. So it might also be a thing in terms of, like, because he likes her and that they have something in common, and she kind of showed him a kindness.
Yeah.
That he is doing a kind gesture by giving his only line of defense to the girl who might now be next in line to be possessed.
Sure.
And it's causing him to be more vulnerable.
He does a lot of nice guy things if you look at it as mental illness, right? Like, mm-hmm. sure, absolutely. Because you're right, she is the only person that gives him the time of day, that smiles at him, and is just like willing to shoot the shit and say, hello, how are you? You're a human being. Everybody else is scared of him, apprehensive, or just doesn't want him to do what he needs to do. No one's helping him.
Murder children.
No, well, yeah, so that's the, but like, you know.
No, I get it.
I do like looking at this more of a Satanist movie or,
Absolutely.
That's way more fun.
But it opens up so many questions. Like, one, is it the house? Is it just the house? The house is like this, maybe it's an eye on the world, this house, and that's how he saw the opportunity to possess Pruitt Taylor Vance, because maybe he is susceptible, maybe he does have an underlying mental illness, and he's able to control. That's where he saw his ideal candy. Mm-hmm. That's where he saw Ethan Embry's character, this almost like intuitive person who he could communicate through.
Maybe it's metal.
It seems like it's the house is the spot.
Maybe the devil's territorial, right? And to Texas, this area of Texas is just his fucking hunting ground. It's like the shark in Jaws.
It confuses me so. Because yeah, then no, also yeah. The art gallery is also the devil.
There's so
it's all the devil. I think everything is the devil.
It definitely does not want to try and point directly to any one thing. Like you're right. It leaves a lot of ambiguity. And I think that's perfect, because I think you need to have that like sense of what's going on here and what's supposed to happen, because the devil's power isn't that he can control you. It's that he can make suggestions. That is your classic Bible, which is sinister, because that implies
you're the one that sins,
right? It's just that you've got this nagging asshole on your shoulder going like, I think it's a good idea. I think you should do it. I think it would be a lot of fun for all of us.
Hey, what if we do the bad thing?
Hey, just spitballing here. What about the bad thing? Oh, Manly, you're always in a pitch meeting with the absolute worst person.
But what if we do what's worse?
Yeah. Oh, it's good. And yeah, you're like, I mean, you're right, because like the guitar doesn't necessarily have to be him signaling that he's met what the devil actually wants, because maybe the voices will go away after he kills her specifically. The other ones have just been appetizers. She's the fucking dessert. She's what the devil really wants. Ultimately, I think what the devil really wants is suffering. Like in the movie.
I think he wants people to sin. I think the real candy is getting somebody to deliver the candy.
And it seems like if he can get as many people involved as possible, that's also great, because not only is Ray part of it, but also her dad. And I think it's just that despair, right? Because if he does have another glass of cognac and doesn't go pick up his daughter in time and Ray gets her, then it's really all his fault and he will be in a hell of his own creation at the death of his daughter. But it will also mean there's a reward for it, which is becoming part of that art gallery and being represented by that art dealer.
That scene with the...
I fucking love that scene so much!
I remember the first time I watched it, like, my jaw dropping open and just looking at you and being like, is that the devil?
Is that the fucking devil in his home?
I was like, is he the fucking devil?
He's so good. Like, he's maybe one of my favorite interpretations, visualizations of the devil on film.
Oh, and like, it's brief too. Like it's, oh, yeah. You expect even that, like in any other movie, he would have such a larger part to play in this movie, but because it's just a sniff, it's just a whiff of the devil.
Yeah.
And like when we get Black Phillip outside and it's just a sniff of Phillip. And then the final version of the painting where there's all of those eyes and there's like
the fucking like Cerberus dogs.
It's almost like somebody cut Black Phillip open and like flattened it out, and you see like, oh, he actually has 8 eyes if you flattened him out. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
It's a really wonderfully terrifying interpretation of this like hellscape Phillip. I love Phillip.
I think
MVP.
To be perfect, like not to break your heart.
MVP, MVP Phillip.
I think when we're looking at the painting, it is dogs and
most
not
valuable
goat,
Phillip.
But, okay.
It's a goat.
Refuse to hear it. Okay. Ray and Zoe are so, oh, it's uncomfortable whenever they're interacting. Like when he's at the door, it's okay, you know.
But when he appears in her bed,
your fucking bed in the middle of the night.
See, and that's one of those things that I was saying about how we skip him breaking into the house. It doesn't matter. We hear the sounds of somebody climbing into her bed, and it's after Dad has spent the whole night in this fugue thing. So you almost think that he's going to just lie with her because she's the sense of solace for him. And instead, it's the fucking guy that wants to murder her.
Yeah, it's fucking scary.
Oh, it is terrifying. And then also, the next sequence when he is going to burn the house down.
Even before that, when he kidnaps her at school, we don't see any of that
happening. We don't see any of it.
We just know that Ethan Embry does not get there in time. She's nowhere to be found. And the next moment we see her, she is gagged and duct taped on his bathroom floor. With a suitcase right beside her and the saw.
Ugh.
Oh, it's good.
After the kidnapping, the police are actually really great in this. Like, we're going to get you witness protection program.
Police are pretty good,
so the family are packing suitcases, ready to leave. It's the final climax of the film. And we don't get to see, but you just hear violence and screaming outside. And all that's outside are 2 police officers charged with protecting this small family. They have basically just been murdered out front with a car and a rock.
Yeah, and now he's upgraded from rock to gun.
And then he's got a gun.
He's got the cop's fucking gun now.
And then it becomes like a true crime story playing out in front of your very eyes. Like when Ethan Embry gets shot and then mom gets shot in the closet and you don't see
it. Oh my God.
And it's just like, I honestly, like I couldn't even physically stop myself. I like cried the whole scene.
Yeah.
I couldn't even handle it. It was so jarring. It was just, they were so helpless.
I feel a little bad for Shuri Appleby in this movie, the actress who plays Mom, Astrid, because she doesn't have a huge role in this movie, but Jesus, is
she's great in that.
She is incredible in every single scene she's in, especially that ending.
Oh, she's so good in it.
Because they're hiding, like, oh man, talk about not showing the things that you normally show, right? Like, they're hiding in a closet somewhere, and we stay with Ethan Embry's body on the floor while Ray goes into that closet. Fucking gunshots go off, and he comes back out with Zoe.
Like, for all we know, she's dead.
I honestly could not remember whether or not she was, and for a half a second thought that was it. And it's even worse than that, because she comes crawling out and is just like begging for her daughter's life, and he tries to shoot her in the head, but he's out of bullets.
What about Zoe being dragged out neck, like, past, for all we know, her dead parents? Like, everybody has failed her. The police have failed her. Her parents have failed her. Her dad has failed her again.
But you feel that too when later on, so like, okay, so Ray starts setting the house on fire. Like, the house is so on fire that Ethan Embry, we keep saying Ethan Embry, that Jesse can't can't run upstairs to go save her. He literally has to get a ladder and break in through her bedroom window, which is already on fire.
They are in that fiery bedroom for a real long time.
You know, we're just lucky that she had so many flame retardant posters.
There would be too much smoke in there to fill them.
But like, you feel all of that in Zoe when, you know, okay, there's a scuffle, Jesse kills Ray, and just like the most fucking metal moment ever.
We all guys, saw your tweet.
The guy's on fire. He beats him to death with the guitar. The guitar breaks. He stabs him with the fucking guitar. I love every minute of it. It's oh God, is it incredible. But he has to coax. He has, like, even in the middle of a fucking inferno, he has to remind his daughter that she can still trust him. Because literally every moment up until then, he has failed her, like you were saying. And it's like, it's a lot for her to actually jump out of that bed and into his arms.
Yeah.
There's so much fucking emotion in this movie. It's insane.
It's sad, and it's interesting too, because in that sequence, there's I would say that nothing paranormal happens in the fire sequence.
No, I don't think so.
But when she is still captive by Ray, Pruitt Taylor Vince, he says, like, look, he's here, look out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we actually get a chance to, like, look in the fire, and we're, like, looking through the fire, and I don't see anything.
Yeah, so that's another... I think that's another smart move the movie takes, though.
To, like, bring the ambiguity back in.
Yeah, because it could just as easily be a story about a guy with a mental illness. And it could just, and you know, which is also happening around the time that Jesse is having this breakthrough in his art that's, like, so impactful that he goes into a flow state where he literally forgets about his entire family and all of his obligations. Like, it doesn't, like, the art dealer doesn't have to be the devil, but in some small way, supernatural or not, he is sacrificing his family for his art, and he's not willing to do that.
Ugh, fuck.
There's so many little things about this movie that we haven't even talked about. I mean, I don't know that we necessarily have time for, but I love the televangelist that we keep cutting to that Pruitt Taylor Vince is watching in his hotel room. Because there is, like, this sinister vibe to it.
Yeah,
like, it's is the devil talking to him through an evangelical preacher?
Is the evangelical preacher the devil? Everybody's the devil.
All of the red shots through the cross on the
door. Oh, my God.
Especially with Pruitt Taylor Vince just, like, disappearing into darkness, fading into focus. Oh, man.
It's even worse when he has a gun and Ethan Embry's just looking out the window and you're like, what are you doing?
Also, this movie just has a killer soundtrack. Holy shit. And, I guess it's worth at least mentioning the sort of, like, savior-like moment at the end where Jesse realizes that, like, oh, yeah, these kids have been screaming out to me. But, like, rather than putting it into this hellfirescape painting, I can take those voices and, I guess, in a sense, use it for good, get salvation for these kids by digging up their corpses around his property. There's a whole bunch of suitcases buried in their yard.
Yeah.
Because that's, we found out from the cops that Ray has been doing this for a while.
Since, like, he was 12, I think.
Yeah, he killed, like, he hit a 9-year-old girl in the head and tried to bury her. Which sounds like it was just the first in a long line of kids that he's been killing for the devil.
Fuck.
This movie kicks a lot of ass.
It's such a crazy story.
I love this movie so
much.
And,
like, it's... so well shot, and it leaves a level of ambiguity where you're like, I want answers, but you almost don't.
Oh,
want
I do
answers.
Not want answers.
Yeah,
I like that feeling of wanting answers. I do not want answers. Never, never.
All right. So, do you want to get to ratings?
4 out of no.
Oh, we already dropped
6.66 out of 6.66. That's our new rating system. We're sticking with it.
All right. So I'm gonna give this 6.66 Ethan Embry abs out of 6.66 Ethan Embry abs.
Sure, of course.
Yeah, I love
it. Oh, that's it. We're not rating. I thought you were giving me two qualifiers. Like, okay, well, very clearly, I got the Ethan Embry rating and then also the rating for the movie.
Oh yeah, I think this. There's a few, like, dialogue-y moments where I'm just like, meh, but I think this movie is wonderful. It's the kind of movie that I have not rewatched enough, but...
Oh, man, but, like, do you really want to burn yourself out on it?
I know!
Or do you just want to revisit it, like, once every few years and just love every second of it?
I feel like I could watch this movie every 3 months. I think I could. I think I would like to.
I think we should watch it in October. I think that's a great idea. It's on the Halloween watch list this year.
Ooh, that's a good idea. So have we confirmed who the devil is?
The preacher.
Everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
We completely glossed over the idea that we've got an Australian director who came to, like, the fucking Bible Belt of America to make a devil movie. To make a heavy metal devil movie. That's an interesting choice, because that's also, like, the most America of America. Like, that boot on the map.
It's the apple pie of...
Yeah, like you...
Of windowsills.
Oh, boy. I cannot wait to see another Sean Byrne movie. I know it's probably going to be a little while. Because he seems like a very patient, takes-his-time guy.
Yeah, well, and he does write and direct, so I'm sure he's got something close to the chest right now, and I cannot wait until we get the chance to see it.
Kim and I love both of these movies, but very clearly, The Devil's Candy is the winner of this week's head-to-head. But that's just our opinion. Let us know what you thought of both of these movies over on Twitter at NOFSPodcast. At facebook.com/groups/horrorfiendsofNOFS, and of course, anywhere else, Reddit, Instagram, you know where to find us.
Thanks again for listening. If you aren't already subscribed, hit that button wherever you're listening to this podcast, and if you have a couple seconds, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. It really helps us grow the show. And if you'd like to support us, Nightmare on Film Street is a labor of love. Head over to patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. There are tons of bonus episodes, content, and rewards for you there in exchange for supporting the show. And all of the money that we make on Patreon goes to our Nightmare on Film Street expenses and contests and giveaways and everything we do to grow the brand. So we appreciate all of our patrons so, so, so much.
And as always, you can support the show for free by just recommending it to a friend, tweeting about it, helping us grow the horde. But until next time, I'm John.
Kim?
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, NOFSPodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends. Oh, our voicemail box is full. I guess we should listen to some of these.
Hello, my name is Destiny Soria. I am director, writer of Christmas Slasher. Christmas Slasher follows a group of college kids, and, well, there's a surprise at the cabin. There is a killer, Rudolph, who turns into a zombie with Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus. We also have a little elf and a sled that comes to life when you come close to it. So we'll be filming next year. It has Nicholas Brandon, Felicia Rose, Lloyd, and some other good, amazing talents. Look out for Christmas Slasher. He's coming to town for revenge. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can smell, please, please. Oh my God, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer has turned into a zombie. He's going to kill us. Oh my God. Oh, please, please, no. Oh my God.
Christmas Slasher coming soon.
Got something to say? Share it on the Nightmare on Film Street hotline, 705-400-9415. That's 705-400-9415. We double dog dare ya.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.